The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey everyone, welcome to Afternoons with Mike at our new time here at 3:05 p.m. Also in the evenings at 9:05 p.m. across the Shepherd Radio Network. Two great guests today, Matt Staver and Dr. Vandy Coulter. Let's get right to it. It's always a joy to be on the phone with Matt Staver from the Liberty Council. And Matt, welcome back to my program.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
You know, there's been so many things that's happened since the last time we've talked. Number one, it was an election cycle like none that I've ever seen before, and one that just went on and on and on, and then culminating on the disastrous afternoon of January the 6th. So with all that being said, I thought I would just run through the time that we have together today through several items that I know that are A, in your caseload, B, on your heart, and see what we can talk about today and get your update on all of these things. First of all, your current cases, something that's been in the news for a number of months has been the Sandra Merritt case. And that's dating back to, obviously, the videos that were released showing the Planned Parenthood's involvement, and not only their involvement, but their attitude toward aborted babies. This case has been tragically, in my mind, tragically extended and drug out. And Sandra, who you are representing her as well. So bring us up to date on what's going on with Sandra.
Well, right now we're at the Court of Appeals for the civil case, and we are headed toward a trial probably later this year in the criminal case. Criminal case started off with about 15, then a 16th. Criminal charge was added. It's unprecedented. Never has there been a criminal charge against a journalist for undercover investigation. All of these interviews were within the clear letter of the law that Sandra and David did of Planned Parenthood and the organ procurement companies. And yet at the same time, what happened is Kamala Harris started this into a focus on not Planned Parenthood, but she supports Planned Parenthood. That's why she wanted to silence Sandra Merritt. And so she began it. Becerra, who's the current attorney general, continued it. He's now a pick for the Secretary of Health and Human Services. He knows nothing about medical, but he is a very strong advocate of abortion. And so that's why he is being picked for that that position, so they can continue to funnel money into the abortion coffers. So that will continue to go. The 16 charges have been reduced now to 8, but there shouldn't be any. And we'll have to go to a full-blown criminal hearing later this year. It's very, very expensive. Sandra could go to jail if convicted. And obviously, as I said, she didn't do anything wrong. She was within the letter of the law, clearly knew what the law was on recording, and she followed that very meticulously. On the civil case, Planned Parenthood filed a civil lawsuit seeking millions of dollars in damages. The judge is a pro-Planned Parenthood advocate. We tried to get him off the case at the beginning. He refused to do so. He's been a long supporter of Planned Parenthood. There's obvious indications of that because of being a landlord for one of Planned Parenthood's clinics and other statements that he and his wife have said. But we went through a lengthy jury trial. And that would have been in the fall of 2018. After that jury trial, the judge wouldn't allow us to show videos. We were only able to show two videos, and yet the whole trial was about the videos, and he didn't want the jury to see them. But when we got to the actual jury, he issued a 105-page jury instruction and then took the issue of liability essentially away from the jury and said that he's already considered them to be violating and that the jury was essentially instructed to assess the amount of damages. So that was like a dog and pony show. It was absolutely unbelievable that he took the essential question away from the jury and decided it himself. That resulted in a $2 million verdict, but then Planned Parenthood's attorneys issued a request for attorney's fees, and the judge granted, believe it or not, $12.78 million in attorney's fees and nearly $1 million in cost, all $14 million almost. And you add the two together, it's about a $15 million verdict. So that's on appeal now at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
You know, all of this feels like a nightmare, and I know it must be that way for you as well. On all of these things, and this brings up, I guess, maybe the bigger umbrella question of the rule of law and the part that, I guess, maybe not only written law, recognized law, constitutional law, you name it, all of these things start to, when you hear that judges are kind of making rulings, that it's almost like they're saying, we don't care what the law is, this is what we're ruling. Will this be run up a higher courts? Is it possible that this could end up in the Supreme Court?
Oh, yes, because the judge in the civil case allowed them to bring a RICO, a racketeering influence corrupt organization law. And what ultimately happened in that is a number of years ago, the Supreme Court already ruled that you could not use that against pro-life speech. And that's exactly what the judge allowed, is allowing RICO to be used against speech. That has already been decided by the Supreme Court. So I think we'll have a lot of good appeal issues. If we don't win at the Ninth Circuit, we want to win at the Court of Appeals. But if we don't, the next step obviously would be the U.S. Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. And with the current makeup of that court, and yet at the same time, there's so many people that when they are talking about today, the year 2021, even with the makeup on the Supreme Court, it's very clear that the Supreme Court had some opportunities to hear some of the cases about the election and the alleged election fraud and the evidence that was brought by all of these people following the November 3rd election, and that Supreme Court chose not to hear it. Do you have any thoughts as to why they would have chosen not to hear that? And here's the follow-up to that. Would that concern really weigh in on this case before us now with Sandra?
No, it's not going to weigh in at all on this particular case. The issues are a lot different. But I will say this. They only did not hear one case. You still have other cases pending at the U.S. Supreme Court as we speak, including one of their first cases issued. That was an injunction by Justice Alito involving Pennsylvania. And that required that the absentee ballots be segregated because likely the ultimate decision was, and that's why he did this, is that they would be unconstitutional for coming in after November the 3rd. The only case they decided not to hear, which I think was clearly disappointing, and that is the Texas case. The Texas case was very well written. It had never been tried before that I knew of like that, so it was a novel case in that respect. But two justices thought the court should take it, but there was not enough for the court to take it. They did not rule on the merits of the case. They ruled on the fact that they said they didn't have standing. I think they did have standing. But at any rate, what I said on the same day, and Giuliani made the same statement, he just didn't back it up. And that is this, that even if Texas doesn't have standing, certainly the candidate, Trump, does have standing. They ought to file right away the same lawsuit in all the different states with President Trump as the plaintiff. Even Giuliani said that that's what they were going to do. But did they do it? No.
Now, why wouldn't they have done it?
Well, that really goes to the core of the problem. It's not whether or not there was election fraud. There was. There's lots of evidence regarding election fraud. And there's, like I said, cases that are still going on. There's investigations that are still going on. So the investigations are not over, even though the big tech and the Democratic leadership want people just to be buried so that never sees the light of day. That's not going to happen. That'll still be in the works in some form. But the problem goes back to who was running the litigation, and that really is the core issue. Giuliani was making all these statements, but he didn't have the horsepower behind him, didn't have a law firm behind him. Jenna Ellis didn't have a law firm behind him. So it's one thing to make statements in public. It's another thing to spend all-nighters and through the weekends to get these things filed, which is what they needed. But everybody that I talked to try to figure out who was involved in running the ship, nobody could figure it out.
Isn't that?
If you look at the, I mean, it's very disappointing, very frustrating, because it's catastrophic. You know, the results. Nobody was really piloting that legal ship, if you will, from an expert standpoint and bringing together the sources that they needed to. The first law firm early on in Pennsylvania was a big law firm, and there was a law firm in Washington, D.C. that was a big law firm. So that's fine. They would have obviously the experience and the horsepower to put these things together. But they then got targeted by the Lincoln Project, and the Lincoln Project doxed the private individuals. They put it up on public information, their home and phone numbers and contact information and their clients. And they went after their clients and the law firm, and they went after the individual lawyers. That intimidated these lawyers and law firms, and therefore they withdrew. And I'm sure he had a hard time getting other firms on because they would become the target as well. I mean, it's really a shame that that happened, notwithstanding the fact that some of these big law firms withdrew, not because there was no merit, but because they were getting personally targeted by the Lincoln Project, and they were putting lots and lots of money and effort, very vicious, into trying to force these law firms, and they were trying to make sure that they didn't represent them. They were even going after their clients, for example. I know a particular law firm where a person had been there for many, many years, a partner, election law attorney, and they went after that law firm's Major League Baseball client, and ended up that that person had to leave the law firm. So it was a very vicious targeting of attorneys and law firms. But notwithstanding that, if you had somebody still running the legal arena, you could have coordinated with other organizations and people to come up with a very good legal team, and that just did not happen. And everybody that was in the know or that could have provided resources could not figure out where the ultimate central command was. It just wasn't in place.
You know, with all the talk that is out there, and we know that it's not just talk because 74 million people did vote for President Trump. So that's unprecedented in and of itself. And then you have these allegations, not just allegations, as we've just said, but with lots and lots of evidence, lots of sworn allegations. Actually, people have put their name on the line and signed affidavits with the, you know, being a willing, having a willingness to be a material witness. With all of that, it just seems like it went nowhere. And I think that one of the big question marks that I feel, Matt, and I think a lot of people feel this way, who were upset about the things that did not happen correctly, things that went beyond what election law would have allowed for it to go, is how could these things just be there? They're on the table. They've been brought up. And yet no one seemingly has the power to do anything. What would be your answer to that?
Well, as I said, there are still some cases even now pending at the U.S. Supreme Court. There's cases pending in other courts as well. There's other investigation that's going on. For example, President Trump in 2018 issued an executive order regarding foreign interference in the election. And there was a report that was supposed to come out in November. If you remember, a couple of days before, the person that was head of it said, indeed, there was foreign influence. China and others had tried to interfere with the elections, but that the report was not ready yet. Now, the amazing thing is that the report still hasn't been released. Peter Navarro released a very solid report.
Yeah.
There's other reports on Dominion voting system and so forth that have been released in investigations. So things that are still going on. The problem that the media did was they looked at all these other cases that had been filed, most of which were not by the vast majority of them. Trump only had a handful, actually. But all these other cases, some of them still go. They're still going right now. But those that were dismissed, they were really dismissed on what's called standing, that they didn't have the legal right to file it. They were never ruled on with regards to the merits, whether there's really election fraud or not. But you would never be able to figure that out by reading the media stories. They wanted to have the narrative that there's just nothing to see here and there's no fraud.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think all of this will come out. Like, for example, they say Biden got 80 million people. I think that kind of a lie is going to continue to be revealed in the first 3 or 4 working days since January 20. You've seen a comparison between Trump's farewell speech versus Biden's inaugural speech. And the number of viewers of Trump's farewell speech dwarfed the viewers of the inaugural speech. And if Biden is so popular, it wouldn't be that way. Moreover, if you look at what YouTube has done, they have there's much more dislikes on either Biden's inauguration speech or his press secretary's press conferences. The dislikes far exceed the likes. So YouTube has tried to remove the dislikes, but then they go right back up again. And if he was so popular and he really did get 80 million votes, then you would have the most watched inauguration in history. And in fact, what you have is the least watched inauguration in history, the least attended inauguration in history, because he's not popular and he never was. And I think that is going to be really, really hard for them to continue to hide as we move forward.
What do you think it would take for, let's say, if it's even possible that this would ever happen, for someone in the media to say, hey, you know what? Something is not right here. Something is stinky about all of this. That doesn't seem likely to happen. Am I wrong on that?
No, I think that for most of the media, there's exceptions, obviously, but those exceptions have been trying to report some truth anyway. But those out there that have been pushing a false narrative, I don't really see much redemption for them. I think they're going to continue to push a false narrative. And I think one of the things that we've seen in the last 4 years, particularly in this election process, is that you cannot trust, I will call them, I guess, mainstream media. They're frankly, they have become extreme media, the major media sources. Mm-hmm. And that's why people are flocking to alternative media sources to be able to get information that these major media sources refuse to give or distort.
So what happens when you have 74, let's say there's 74 million people and that count was accurate, that have voted one way, and then all of these things have happened where it's gone the other direction. We know clearly our country is still divided. And what happens to those on the conservative side, Matt? What direction do you see conservatives taking from this day forward?
Well, I think you go through a certain kind of grieving process, just like you do in any disappointment or loss. And I think we have gone through that. Some people will take a little bit longer than others. I'm frankly through that. We wanted to see a different outcome. That didn't happen. I think what ultimately happened, however, is that their attempt to erase 74 million, and there's really more than that because you really think about the families of those that can't vote. They're ineligible. They're young, but they're part of those families. So you're looking at 100 million plus people out there. They want to erase them. They want to eliminate Donald Trump. They want to eliminate any movement. They want to silence anybody who either voted for him, supports him, has Judeo-Christian values, or believes that there was fraud in the election. So they want to eliminate them. So consequently, I think they will try to eliminate them, and that's not going to work. People are going to come through this, and they're going to say, enough is enough. Big Tech's trying to censor me. These people trying to punish other people. I mean, I just heard today that one of the members of the House of Representatives in Central Florida wants to prevent anybody who was a Trump supporter from entering into the military. I mean, that's just absurd. That will backfire. Big Tech censorship will backfire. And this movement of people who love God and love America, they're not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. You know, we saw the rise of the Tea Party at in 2007, 2008, I think is when they were really getting to go strong. Do you see a similar type of coming together in the country with a group like that that would not be a part of the, if you could call it the swamp? That's what Trump called the kind of like the established conservative parties in D.C. and the makeup of the people in there. Do you see another grassroots level rising like that?
Yeah, let me just say this. Trump's not going to be gone from the scene. And the movement that he energized is not going anywhere. And in fact, it's more energized, and it will become more energized than it ever was. Just imagine this. If President Trump were to come to Orlando, there's no doubt in my mind, within 24 hours or less, he could pack the biggest football stadium that we have in Central Florida. And I can tell you that if he goes anyplace else, that will also happen. They will not be able to get rid of 100 plus million, 74 million voters, but, you know, 100 plus million people. And I think the other thing that will happen, this narrative that some people believe that the problems are coming from Trump rather than the problems coming from the opposition to President Trump is going to be very evident. You can see a lack of tolerance in just the first 3 days of Biden's administration. Mm-hmm. You can see even the unions are coming out against him now. The unions are coming out against him because of what he just did with the XL pipeline. There's been over 50,000 jobs that have been lost just in the stroke of a pen. Texas has already sued him over immigration. Canada is threatening to sue him over the XL pipeline. They invested $1.1 billion, and without even a call or a courtesy heads up, he just decides he's going to stop that. So what we're going to see is this radicalism, and it's going to be, I think, become more evident even to people who voted for him. I think you're going to get buyer's regret. I think you're going to get people who even maybe didn't even vote are going to be able to see this is nonsense. This is crazy, and I'm mm-hmm. going to get involved. So the 74 plus million people, they're not going anywhere. They're not going to just be silenced. You're not going to erase those. And I think it'll become very evident as more evil is revealed that, you know, this is the wrong turn in America. Just for example, last week, for example, on live on C-SPAN, Biden was walking into a building, and there were Marines there, and he has a handler that's speaking into his ear, like what happened during one of the debates.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got his head down. He's walking in, and the handler says, "Salute the Marines." And Biden is used to saying whatever that person's saying in his earpiece. He keeps his head down. He walks right past the Marines that are at attention, and he doesn't salute them. Instead, what does he do? He says, "Salute the Marines."
Mm.
I think that the Democrats are going to be sorry that they've ever referenced the 25th Amendment regarding the incompetency of the president. Because I think, unfortunately for him as an individual, we're going to see more and more of that in the coming days. And we're going to see more intolerance and radicalism. And that will not only energize those that say, "I'm not going to be erased," but it's going to wake up others as well to say, "This is the wrong direction."
Now, there are some people, Matt, that I've heard that believe that the reason that all of that was brought up by Nancy Pelosi was that it wasn't for Trump at all. The 25th Amendment talk was almost like a preview of what was going to happen after Biden became election. But do you think there's any merit to any of that?
I do think there's probably some merit to that, because there was a question that Trump had actually, or not Trump, but Biden was being interviewed, and he was asked a question. This was before the election, or right after the election. It was right around that time. "What happens if you and Harris have a disagreement?" He says, "Well, I'll handle it the same way as I did with Obama. If we had a disagreement that we couldn't reconcile, then I would get a disease and resign." Now, any interviewer hearing that would have said, "Excuse me, what did you just say? You're going to get a disease and resign?" The question was in response to, "What would you do if there's a conflict between you and Harris?" I would get it. I'd do the same thing as I did with Obama, or I would have done if we had irreconcilable opinions. I would get a disease and resign.
Yeah, because back then he was vice president, not president.
And I know, but he said that as in this situation, a president versus vice president.
Wow.
So it is unbelievable that he said that. It's unbelievable that the media didn't ask him a follow-up. But I think that that has been their plan. You go back to before the election, there's a video of Harris's husband walking into a room with a few people because they never had any big crowds at all. And he's excited. He says, I'm married to the next president of the United States of America.
Mm.
Now, this was before November the 3rd. And when you look at it, you thought, yeah, that's probably what they're wanting to do. They don't care about Biden. They want to get Harris in that position.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't doubt that they would use the 25th Amendment against Biden so that they could get Harris in there. Now, unfortunately for Biden, I think the 25th Amendment is something that ultimately may have to be used because, you know, with all due respect to him as an individual, he has some form of mental cognition problem. And that's why you just saw him last week repeating what his handler said instead of recognizing that that was a
that was
direct,
an alert. Yeah.
Yeah. He just repeated it and he never did salute the Marines.
Well, and
so I think we're going to see more of that.
You know, if anything like that would have happened against anyone, not only just President Trump, but any of the leading senators that were Republicans, the news media would have been all over that. That would have been a top story.
Oh, yeah.
And yet it's not been, I've not heard that at all. That,
no.
Yeah, it's just kind of hidden.
But it's directly on C-SPAN, and it's very audible, and it's frankly embarrassing, and it's disgraceful.
Well, there's something that I want to ask you before you leave in the time that we have remaining. Going back to what you said about the Supreme Court, the items that are yet to be heard that would have to do with these events of both election irregularities, alleged election fraud. I'm going to preface it that way because I think that's legally the way I need to preface that. When you have people who have signed affidavits, and now we know that some of these things are still, as you said, to be heard, what do you see happening with any of these things that are before the Supreme Court? What do you think, A, they will do, and what can they do?
Well, I don't know what they will do. I do know here's where we have an issue with those cases pending before the Supreme Court, and that is whether or not it becomes moot. In other words, they could decide some of those cases, particularly the case involving Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
because it's a straight legal case that you can't change when the legislature doesn't change the rules of the election. You can't just unilaterally change it, and the court can't change it, and Secretary of State can't change it. It's a legislative duty. And the legislature refused to change it. They didn't want to extend the ballots after November the 3rd. I think they could still argue that because that could easily be something that could be repeated again, even though it's kind of hard to put the horse back in the barn of this barn. You can have that same thing happening again in future elections. So some of those they may ultimately decide it's not going to be a remedy for this election, but I think some of it will be a remedy for future elections.
Well, there would be a great hope that that would be the case, because if these things and these allegations are as widespread as they are, and we know they affected at least four states that were in question, the thing that I'm hearing more than just about any other phrase is this, Matt: I don't know that I can ever trust my vote to be rightly counted, rightly handled again.
I know. That's the big question that people have, and that's why we at Liberty Council and Liberty Council Action, we've created an election integrity project where we're going to make sure, and we're going to be working with a number of legislators on the state level to pass legislation dealing with voter ID, mail-in ballots, and computer software.
Mm-hmm.
Those three things really need to be reformed at the state level for all of these elections, whether it's local or national, so that we can have fair elections. Otherwise, you know, we might as well live in a Venezuela or some other repressive regime where our votes really don't matter. It's just a dog and pony show, and it really doesn't mean anything.
Well, we're praying that it will continue to mean something and mean something very precious, as all of us that have lived in this United States of America all these years, that is one thing that I know people are not ready to give up on, and I pray that that fight keeps. And Matt, I'm just praying that people continue to pray for you and the Liberty Council, for Holly Mead, all of the wonderful people that are there that you work with side by side. You know, you're kind of like the front line in a war, and you know, we always want to pray for those, especially on the front line, because you guys are just prone for zingers, prone for shots that, I don't mean literal shots now in this metaphor, but I'm talking about the discouragement. The chance for discouragement could be great for you guys. And yet I know you, and I know that your faith and your hope and your trust is in the sovereign God, and he's going to help you through. And I know you believe that, but we want to pray for you, man. And we're doing that. Let me pray for you right now. Can I do that?
Sure.
Lord, I thank you for Matt. I thank you for all of these at the Liberty Council. And we ask, God, that you would give them strength, that you would give them endurance, that at the end of each and every day, they would remember that the battle is the Lord's. And thank you that they are representing so many wonderful people on a day-to-day basis in the most difficult of circumstances. So encourage their hearts, we pray, in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you.
Matt Staver, my guest today from the Liberty Council. Thank you for once again being with me, my friend.
Thank you. My pleasure to be with you.
All right. God bless. And friends, we'll be back in a moment right here on Afternoons with Mike. Don't go away. So appreciate Matt Staver being with us today. And now on the line, I have a friend. I tell you what, this guy is always doing something for God in a major way. And I met Vandy Coulter way back, oh my goodness, in the very early days of our move. When we moved from Gainesville back to Orlando, I got to attend one of the chamber meetings, and there is Vandy Coulter. He was starting a church. I found out that this is one of the more interesting fellows. He's been in New York City. He has been a hip hop artist producer. I don't know where that one came from. He is a doctor. You're just one of those guys, Vandy Coulter, that you've got more energy than most people, but I'm glad to know you, and I'm glad to have you back on my program.
Thank you.
And you and Barbara, you guys do these marvelous retreats for couples. Tell me a little bit about the genesis of your desire to help couples in their relationship and in so doing, helping them with their relationship with the Lord as well.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. While we both have our why associated with Love and Happiness, LLC, which is our company that we do our relational services through in terms of retreats, workshops, master classes, and I also have a counseling practice. Interesting enough that I counsel from all over the country. That's a general counseling practice, but I'm always excited when any of the clients identify themselves as Christians, because then I can shift to the real Christian-based counseling that can really, you know the difference that the Lord makes. So it's interesting because my why for me is really the result of tragedy. You know, it's really the result of first, you know, years ago, back in 1989, my first wife. I mean, we had an amazing marriage. You know, The Cosby Show was out then, and most people equated our relationship to that because it really was. It was a legitimate. It wasn't a TV show version. We had a great love affair. We couldn't have, you know, the world, you can look at us and tell they love each other, and we got just the perfect, quote unquote situation. And she was out getting me gifts the day before my birthday, and literally, back then, seatbelts weren't required, and she was a stickler for seatbelts all the time. And I was like, whatever, it's no need, it's not a law, what are you bugging me for? And she would be always making me wear one. And in this particular instance, she took her seatbelt off. She was in the back of a cab, and she took it off to call me because I was in the music business, and I was supposed to be heading to an industry meeting. And she said, hey, I just finished getting all your gifts. I'm so sorry. I'm running late, you know, because I was watching our 3 and 5 year old daughters. And she said, you know, I'll be home in about 30 minutes. And 30 minutes never came because that cab driver basically drove recklessly, and she was tragically killed.
Oh.
And, you know, and my whole world just crashed, and I was devastated. I couldn't even, you know, figure out, you know, we were together 8 years, and we just hit a niche after the first two of just kind of working out the bumps to where, you know, the last six were just so smooth. I literally tell people the honest to God truth that we didn't argue. And we didn't even have cross words. We were in such a sweet spot that you would never believe that 20-year-olds, we were, you know, I was, you know, 22 to 29. I turned 29 the next day when she was, you know, lost. And you know, so I went through life, Mike, with this mindset, like, you know, just like, man, I had something so great. But, you know, the funny thing is, I had a friend of mine, I'm now saved and walking with the Lord. And he said to me one day, you know, when I was sharing how great things was, he said, you think you'll ever be that happy again? And I said, absolutely. And I said it with such, without such hesitation. He was like, wait a minute, well, what makes you think you're going to be that happy? I mean, you just described their most perfect relationship. Mm-hmm. And I said, because, you know, from what I know about God, I'm like 30 at that time. I'm about 32 when I meet this particular guy. I said, if you tell me the best days of my life are behind me, that's not the God that I know of. So I have to believe the best is yet to come. So I have every expectation that when I do find myself going back into a marriage, it's going to be even better. And I'm a witness that God will do what we say. That you can have what you say, and you say what you will have, because I end up meeting, you know, who is truly, you know, I can say the love of my life, because as a young man, while we hit a sweet spot, I didn't know what I didn't know about all of the different moving parts that you really need to navigate to have the deeper intimacy. You know, you get to know yourself better as we mature. And by me maturing better, I can give more of myself in ways I didn't even realize that wasn't available, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, that's not to put anything down about that first marriage.
There
I tell you,
you go. It doesn't.
It does
that's
not.
Right.
And
that's right.
And I think what you said is not, it's not natural, but it is supernatural. It is God's plan. And I think that person who was talking with you probably brought up what most people would say when, you know, I've heard your story even in great detail. And it is a marvelous testimony that you have, Vandy. And, yeah. You know, it is so counterintuitive to our natural way of thinking that a person can see that kind of relationship that you now have as being what it is so great after going through tragedy, because most people will think, hey, you had it and you lost it. Most people never have it that great to begin with. You had your one time in the sun, and now you're going to go through the rest of your life with a limp. And, you know, that just wasn't God's purpose for you.
And, well, you know what I really think? When I said you have what you say, and this is my just doctrinal position, having two doctorates, one in biblical studies, a PhD in theology, is my thought process. I really believe the same way God never told Elijah on Mount Carmel to pull those prophets together, make fun of them and clown them while they do it, tell them to put extra water on the wood. All of Elijah, he literally just took the authority that God had given him based on his knowledge of God, relationship with God, and his prophetic relationship. And he told them, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. Matter of fact, put more water on it. I'm laughing because I'm waiting for your God to show up. And he's in a little flesh because he's laughing at them and mocking them. But he had connected his words by faith in God in such a way that God didn't just show up, but he licked every bit of the stone and caused it to be away. So I really think that what happens in many people's lives is they're waiting for God, and God is like, open your mouth. I've given you authority that if you decide to say it and believe it, because we say stuff we don't truly believe.
Mm-hmm.
But if you believe God, God has given us a bridge that we can introduce. So I spoke into my future without seeing evidence while I was in that moment that the next great, the greatest love of my life would be in front of me, because I believe God would have better for me in spite of being in a wilderness of now being a single parent, raising these girls and all that kind of stuff, if that makes sense.
It does. And you were a very successful single parent. I know you juggled all of that, and God helped you do that. And you know, something that I think about the scripture that says that now we're to comfort one another with the comfort that we ourselves have been comforted from. And that is true in your life. You're able as a counselor, you're able as a person, you and your wife as a couple now that leads these marriage retreats and these Valentine things, which is what we're going to talk about here in a moment, that's upcoming. You're able to do that because you've tasted the grace of God in healing. Yeah. You've tasted the grace of God in renewal, and you're able to give from a deep well.
My why and passion is as a result of observing so many couples for 30, 40 years and seeing they are in love, but they are not happy.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that they are broken in areas of trust, communication, past hurts, you know, it's like when I was a police chaplain, I learned a lot about, trauma and how it affects us. And knowing that these people are together 25 years, they're boasting, but the problems from 20 years ago are still in their current day. And the misery that brings when you love somebody, but you just reduce and accept, it is what it is. We're not, why can't you be more like? And so I had a passion to bridge that because God had gifted me with a gift of reconciliation. And it was always operating. I remember being 13 years old, watching my mom, my dad died young, and the man she's with have such a dysfunctional relationship. I'm sitting between them at 13, counseling in essence, saying, why? Now, you said you love them. And I'm literally using that gift in communicating to these broken and, these patterns of dysfunction, not successfully, but I look back and I'm like, I'm actually sitting there trying to bridge gaps because I can see the moving parts of the situation. I can see what you're really trying to say. And so now being in so much of counseling and then pastoring all the years, it's so sharpened that what I love is when my clients, when I counsel them, they just say, what I appreciate is you see me, And I'm like, yeah, I do. And then I can see you, meet you where you are and help you bridge to where you want to be, which is happiness. Everyone is looking at love. But love means nothing without happiness. And that's what love and happiness is really about, is to understand that you can have someone in love and you can also still be happy. And we say create your happily ever after. People think we're talking fairy tale. What we're saying is after the disappointment, after the infidelity, after the hurt, after what's broken, you can still be happy. But you're going to have to put in work to create it. And we give you the tools to do that. In our retreats, in my counseling practice, in, our master classes, we give you tools. That's what people appreciate in my counseling. They say, I just paid, several hundred dollars with people for therapy and counseling, and I didn't get tools. I got a conversation. And, you're giving us tools that are working for us, So I'm excited that I can just do what God has graced, me to do. Me and my wife get to do what God has graced us to do.
Well, I tell you what, we're going to hear more about that very special love and happiness event that's coming up on Valentine's Day, actually on the 11th, I think it is, of February, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. All the details is on our website, loveandhappiness.tv. But yeah, I'm looking forward to opening this up and explaining to people why you should have this virtual retreat right before Valentine's Day and enjoy your mate better on the day.
Oh, that's a great strategy right there. We're going to be back with Vandy one more time. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. My guest today, Vandy Coulter. And I'll be right back. Back again with my guest, Vandy Coulter. I should be saying Dr. Vandy Coulter. And Vandy and his wife are leading this big event that's coming up on February the 11th. It's called the Let's Stay Together Virtual Couples Retreat. And it's going to be on the 11th of February at 7 p.m. And what a great idea to do this virtual retreat prior to actual Valentine's Day. And like you said before the break, this could end up being a much better Valentine's Day this year if they take the time and invest it and put that knowledge at work that God has given you and let that impact their lives. You know, we were talking about tools. Now, my dad was a carpenter. He was in actual carpentry and building and home improvement. And so a toolbox is something that I grew up around and with. My dad equipped me with a toolbox when I was a young man. And it is my joy to have been a lover of tools. Tools are very important. You talked about the difference in counseling people and giving them tools. What are the specific tools that you can give somebody today who finds themselves, I love my wife or I love my husband, but things are not where they need to be? What tools can you offer?
I'll offer one tool. We have a myriad of tools. It's kind of like that's a core value of mine is because of reconciliation. I just think you have to kind of teach if you want to get changed. So there has to be more than telling somebody, you know, get yourself together. You have to kind of show someone the bridge or the path to that. So we have a number of tools, and because every relationship is so diverse with their complex problems, but there are some tools that cut through and are consistent with no matter what the dynamic is. So one of the tools that we use, and this is one actually that we'll be including in our upcoming Let's Stay Together virtual couples retreat, because we have couples retreat scheduled now as a response to COVID. This is our first virtual. We normally do physical retreats in different cities, and now we're doing this as a virtual path to respond to the studies of anxiety and couples, you know, intimacy is just, you know, at an all-time low, studies are showing. So in any event, the tools the one tool that I love making as like a universal tool in the toolbox your dad had, you know, you'll always need either a screwdriver or a phillip or a drill or a hammer. You know, there's certain tools that are almost universal for general jobs, right?
Yes, indeed.
Well, we have a tool that we call phrasing. And what phrasing is, while it's a tool that's best used whereas we explain to people, you know, and it's the byproduct of a conversation. Most of, you know, if we were drug dealers, me and my wife get high on our own supply. You know, I mean, we literally had used these in the beginning of our relationship. By the time I meet her, I'm counseling, and I'm seeing the moving parts of being adults and now getting into a relationship. And you come in with all these different, you know, kind of focuses, and I come in with different focuses. And I'm realizing that in order for us to kind of get into that center, that circle of happiness, there were some things that I would be saying the most amazing things, Mike, in a moment of conflict. And after I finish, I'm like, you're not even listening. You're not hearing me. You stopped hearing me like 20 minutes into my great dissertation about why you need to do this thing. And then I realized as a student of people that I need to phrase it differently. So I gave my wife a perspective that we then added into our course, which is, do you want to be right or received? Mm. Because most people are right. But then the problem is their mate can't receive them. And so I was 100% right, and there would be times my wife would be 100% right, but we didn't receive each other. So then I realized, as with any doctor, in this case, the psychological and the spiritual and emotional doctor that I focus from, was, okay, if that's the problem of you're right, but you're not being received, let's look at a kind of like formula to circumvent that. And that's where phrasing comes in. And phrasing is more than just saying it in a nice way so your mate can hear it. That's really patronizing and usually alienating the other person, where they just say, you know what, I can't with you, you know, because you're almost, you know, you're patronizing, you know. It's not about that. What phrasing is really, it's a tool best used when you fundamentally recognize the philosophy philosophy of communication.
And the
by
yeah,
that,
and
what I mean,
and the power of our words, right?
Well, no, it's the power of understanding, because most people communicate to be heard. But what phrasing does is it now changes my focus from being heard to being received.
Okay.
So I operate philosophically with the knowledge of my mate to say to myself, okay, she's sensitive here. Maybe she's insecure here. Maybe she has a hard time confronting an issue here. And notice none of it has to do with my words. It starts with my ability philosophically to study her or him in a way that says, the best way to reach them is mm-hmm. to make sure that when I start trying to explain what's important to me, they don't take that as an attack and make it about them, because that's when it all falls off the desk of effective communication. So phrasing is something that we teach in a very, very almost scientific manner, in a practical way that empowers couples. You know, like, you know, I can hear the testimony of one couple that's been married for like 12 years. You know, after our physical retreat, their testimony was, you know, the woman said, this will change forever how I communicate with my husband, you know. Mm. So phrasing is something that we love to give, because phrasing allows you to keep the main thing the main thing, because there's nothing more frustrating than you really are just trying to speak about what they did to disturb you. And all of a sudden you're chasing the ghost from the past, the offense in the moment, and seven other things. And then you just feel like, I can't with you. So we teach phrasing, and that's a powerful tool that I highly encourage people to understand, because it's not as simple as, hey, say it nicely.
Right.
That's not the point. Because if they're in their mind, they're in a negative state, no matter how nice you say it, it sounds like you said something like, you know, you say good morning to the wrong person, they say, what's good about it? Like, I just
yes.
said good morning. What's the problem?
Hey, we've got just about a minute left. Give us the details again about this upcoming retreat.
All right. I'm going to lead with the fun part. We're going to give 10 of your listeners free registration to our upcoming virtual couples retreat. Now, normally it's $49. We've got a promotion running right now where it's only $29, because obviously our goal, our mission with Love and Happiness is to help 1 million couples. So if you go on matter of fact, just send us an email. I'm going to make life really easy. So if you're sitting right now listening to this, you can open up your email and email contactus@loveandhappiness.tv, all spelled out, loveandhappiness.tv. In the subject, the first 10 people that just in the subject, just type Mike at the Shepherd. I don't care if it's an at sign the Shepherd or the word at the Shepherd. As long as it's Mike at the Shepherd, we will send you the link so that you can attend for free at the couples retreat. It's going to be February 11th, but there's a free replay in case anyone misses it. An hour after it, you will get an email that will have a free replay that you can watch at your leisure. So you're not going to be trapped if you have a conflict on the 11th.
Oh, that's wonderful. And that's loveandhappiness.tv. And that address was contactus@loveandhappiness.tv.
And yes, that's our website, loveandhappiness.tv. So
yeah.
If people want to go and explore some testimonials or just all the things about counseling or anything else, they can go right there for that.
That's tremendous. Hey, buddy, we're out of time. It's always a joy to catch up with you, Vandy, and
likewise.
Say hello to Barbara.
I sure will.
And thank you for being with me on the program today, and we wish you the best in this upcoming retreat and in 2021 as well. Thank you for being here with me today as well. We'll catch you next time right here on The Shepherd.